This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. If you watched MTV in the 1990s, then you might have seen our next guest. Kevin Allison was a fixture on the sketch comedy show The State. In fact, he thought he and his comedian buddies would be there and be together forever. But like all things, the show ended and they went their separate ways. Kevin spent years trying to figure out what kind of comedy he wanted to do. He tried out various wacky personas, but people kept telling him he was funnier just being himself. Finally, he took their suggestion and he started Risk. It's a live storytelling show where people, including Kevin, reveal things about themselves they never thought they'd share. Kevin Allison's in town as part of the North Carolina Comedy Arts Festival. He's going to recreate the show Risk tomorrow night at the Arts Center in Carrboro. But first, Kevin Allison is on the State of Things. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much. Great to be here.
Tell us about the evolution from sketch comedy to Risk.
You know, The State, we thought we were going to be together forever like the Rolling Stones. That was kind of our mantra, that we had such great chemistry that we had to stay together forever. And, of course, we were naive. We were in our early 20s. It just doesn't work that way. And I had always been one of the black sheep, one of the kind of, you know, off in my own universe members of the group. So when the group broke up, I thought, oh, my gosh, I guess I'm a comedian now. I guess I should start a solo career. And because we had been doing sketch comedy, what I started trying to do on stage was telling stories, but as crazy, big, kooky characters. And for about 12 years, I was starving. I would go into auditions and, you know, because I'm gay, my agents would send me out on gay auditions and then they would be like, well, you're not, you know, gorgeous enough, and you're not like snarky enough. I just never fit all these boxes that agents and managers and Hollywood types had in mind. I always just felt like I was too this or too that, a little too weird and yet a little too polite, a little too gay and yet a little too bizarre, you know. So I just didn't know how to express myself on stage. And I was terrified of the thought of just being myself. The State used to have these check-ins in the morning when we would, you know, start our days at MTV. And it was just everyone would emotionally say where they were. But everyone else in the group had been together the night before because I was the only gay member. So I was out on my own having my own little adventures in New York City trying to meet guys. And so when we'd have check-ins, everyone would always say, Kevin's always got the kookiest, craziest check-ins. Those are great stories. They'd say, you should tell them on stage. And I'd always say, oh, no, it's too risky. I just don't feel like I can reveal that much about myself. And it wasn't until I was, about to turn 40 that I realized, you know what? They say that artists should make art like your parents are dead.
Well, there you go.
The philosophy that you should stop worrying so much about what people might think and really try expressing yourself in your art the way you would to your best friend or your therapist. Mm. And so in 2008, I finally gave it a shot, and it was like night and day. Everything changed for me.
You're telling stories about yourself. And it's interesting, too, because if you tell that to an artist, they don't necessarily – not all art is autobiographical. Mm. There's got to be elements of it. It has to be honest and authentic, but not necessarily a story that happened to you on that canvas or in that sculpture. So this is in a way, the authenticity part's the same, and yet you really have to tell a story about yourself.
Yeah, you know, it might have something to do with my psychology itself. It might be that – you know, I have these issues that because I realized I was gay when I was really, honestly, still in diapers. I mean, I was, you know, I was terrified of going to kindergarten because I already knew what the word gay meant. And I already knew that that applied to me. And that's a very frightening thing for a child to be dealing with in the early 70s in Cincinnati, Ohio. So I grew up very afraid of what was inside of me, what I really was, and always felt like I had to come out about this or come out about that. That's why I became funny in the first place, because I felt like I'm a weirdo. So I better like let people know I'm weird by making jokes. Mm. And then later on, there's more coming out.
Well, that gets to this issue of revelation and concealment, that you can kind of let on. You can be weird and bigger than life in a way that could be unacceptable, right? I mean, weird is unacceptable. People may not like me weird, but you get comfortable because, oh, they're laughing at me weird. So I'm exposing a little bit of myself. I'm being honest. And yet, at the same time, this over-the-top, right, presentation of me is concealing a part of me I don't want you to know about.
It's fascinating because as you develop as a storyteller, when you start doing it for your career or just doing it on a regular basis, you notice that you're tweaking little things, you know? I remember like looking at like the career of Bob Dylan, who was like the first person who really inspired me as an artist when I was a kid. You can very clearly see him over the years crafting and tweaking a voice, a way of speaking, a way of singing. And I think a lot of people do. I think like George W. Bush with his Texan accent when he's not from Texas.
right. Where'd he get that? Yeah.
A lot of us do that where we kind of like, there are parts of ourselves that we've kind of tweaked and manufactured, but we're ultimately trying to get to what feels most like us.
And you do it not only for yourself, but now you're inviting other people who haven't been through your experience or have the same kind of thoughts to get up there on stage and tell stories.
Yeah, that has been one of the most exciting things for me. When we first started putting Risk out as an audio podcast, people started writing in saying, oh my gosh, I heard that person's story and now I feel like a little bit less of a freak, or I'm inspired because I hear that person went through a tougher time than I happen to be going through right now, that sort of thing. And so fans started writing in saying, well, you know, I was molested when I was 5 and I'd really like to share that story. And so at first, the show was very funny, just, you know, mortifying experiences, you took too much mushrooms and something ridiculous happened, that sort of thing. But then we started getting these stories that were quite emotionally raw. And now that's what people love about the show, is that it can go from completely ridiculously hilarious to heart-wrenching. And it's all the same idea of, well, I'm just going to tell this the way I'd tell my friends.
And clearly there's an appetite for this. I mean, it sounds a little like The Moth. We have a local version of it called The Monty, where people get up and tell stories. Is there something that is different about that, is some in terms of the instruction or the frame that you create in Risk?
Well, you know, I was very inspired by The Moth and This American Life when I first started Risk. I knew I wanted it to be an audio podcast from the beginning because I knew that that would force me to really continue doing it and be getting it out to a larger audience. So I was listening to a lot of This American Life and The Moth, but I realized that because that happens on public radio, of course there's standards and practices. I thought, well, if there's one thing I could do differently, it would be to push people to not censor themselves at all and just see what happens. Now, some of the stories on Risk could actually be run on The Moth or This American Life. But there is just that overriding frame where people know, okay, I'm supposed to step outside my comfort zone and get a little more candid than I ever thought I'd be doing in front of an audience. And so it's the thread that holds it all together, like going a little bit further than you thought you might.
And what about the audio side of this, the fact that it's designed for the ear? Are stories more emotional, more powerful when they're designed for the ear, do you think?
I am very passionate about that. Like, to me, that's another way that Risk was coming home for me. Because when I was a kid, I used to make little radio dramas on a Radio Shack cassette recorder. I was just in love with recording and the voice. And I don't think people appreciate the extent, or at least a lot of the people I talk to, people are always like, why not video, video, video? There's just something so intimate and so right in – it's as if you're speaking directly into people's ears like you would be in, you know, if you were in bed with them or something. So, yes, I think that there's something extraordinary about going into that kind of theater of the mind. You're relying – I mean, the person who's only hearing a voice is filling in a lot with their imagination. So I think that there's just something magical about the audio side to it that makes it even more intimate somehow.
You've been doing it for a while now. I have any favorites?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, you know, it is interesting that the ones that do tend to be my favorites are the ones that are the most emotionally raw. There was a episode recently called Live from Philly, and a young lady named Becca Traben got up, and she told the story about how she overdosed on mushrooms and opium when she's 20 years old in college. And she had a complete meltdown and tried to kill her mother, tried to stab her mother to death. And she just relived it on stage, what she was yelling at her mother, what her mother was yelling back at her. And the tears in the audience, because this is a young lady who dearly loves her mother. And it was a story about forgiveness and working through mental illness. It was just extraordinary. And afterwards, I had her back on the show to tell the story of what it was like to share that story.
Well, I was going to ask you, did you know if she had ever told that story before? I mean, not publicly, obviously, but had she even, had her friends known about it?
Well, that was so I teach, I also have a school called thestorystudio.org, and she came and took one of my classes, and her stories were very funny, and I loved her, and I said, come do the show. And it wasn't until a couple days before the show where she said, I think I've got a story for you.
Wow.
And yes, she was not out about it to a lot of her friends.
And how did things change? What was it like for her to tell the story?
She said she got so much support and so many tweets and all that sort of thing of people just saying, oh my gosh, I'm just so impressed. It just, something about telling a story like that makes you feel, you never completely master those complexes or those, you know, traumatic injuries in your life. But being able to share that way, to relive it that way, does make you feel like, well, I've got more of a handle on it than ever before.
I have this feeling that in your head, the story is in such a compressed form. If you think about compression formats and audio and video, it's in such a compressed form that it just isn't intelligible until it gets out, projected on the screen, and all the bits are kind of in front of you in real scale or even bigger than life.
Well, what you do is you start asking how and why questions. You start saying, well, wait, why was I so in the mood to take mushrooms that week? You know, and wait, did I have a problem with my mom at that time? That sort of thing. And you start really going back into it.
So now tomorrow night, you're going to be at the Art Center in Carrboro, and you're going to do a version of Risk. What's that look like on stage?
Oh, well, it's super fun. We will have musicians up there to like do musical bits between the stories. I'll do the hosting. I'll start off telling a story. And then we have four or five. One of them might not be there because of the weather in New York City. Four or five storytellers, some local, some comedians, some who are just people who happen to be great raconteurs, sharing true stories from their lives.
Well, that sounds great in front of a live audience, too. So that part will be good. So what's the business plan here? You know, you have this gig on MTV, probably some other options if you wanted to keep living the life you did. You're doing this now. You're podcasting. Can you make a living?
Well, it's really a struggle. The Risk, the podcast, we ask for donations every episode. We do have advertisers, but advertisers just don't understand podcasting yet. Mm. They don't even understand that you can actually see the literal number of downloads, you know? But so the school, the Story Studio, teaching this stuff is where I think the bread and butter is. And it's a joy, too. One of the things is, I'll teach business people how to tell stories for their businesses. And every now and then I'm like, wait a minute, can you also tell that story on my show?
Well, I think you had an interesting experience at, what was it, Sunglass Hut? Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, I was so afraid that dealing with corporate people would be so different from me because I come from an artistic background. I've never had like a 9-to-5 sort of gig. But they really love it. They really appreciate that someone from a different world is coming in to teach them how to speak in a more human and evocative way. At Sunglass Hut, it was all these executives, and the bosses wanted them to be telling stories about Chanel sunglasses or Prada sunglasses. And I said, wait, folks. I don't want to hear about the sunglasses so much. Why don't you tell me a story about your grandmother who you dearly loved and some of the things you remember her doing and saying? Oh, and the fact that she loved Chanel sunglasses. And by the end of this day, everyone was in tears. It was just a big old love fest. And people felt like they had really learned how to communicate about their products in a new way.
Well, why do they hire you? Is it to be entertaining, or do they think their advertising folks will be better storytellers? Why do they hire you?
Absolutely, because you can reframe any bit of information you want to communicate in a more story-like way. You don't even have to have a hero's journey of a five-beat structure. You can have just a simple, well, our research finding shows, blah, 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 dry facts and figures. You can reframe that in a much more human, sensorial, evocative way, like someone would in a story.
Now, it sounds you're perilously sort of moving over to the dark side, if I may, just because you start with this epiphany of authenticity, be who I am, and now you tell me how to sell sunglasses for too much money that I don't need. Sorry.
Well, I really do feel that there is something to be said for asking people to look for more authenticity, no matter what the environment is that they're in.
And you're hoping they're going to tell the truth, that what they're saying about this product is the truth, how to get at it and how to, you know, reach deep. So what about teaching now? The idea that, all right, you've done it, you're successful at it, but now coaching other people to do it. What have you learned about storytelling just because you've had to think about telling other people to do it?
Well, it's interesting. People have a habit of wanting to summarize things in a very general and abstract way, a way that where they're like, well, someone might not understand where I came from exactly, so I'll keep this very general. In fact, we want the opposite. We want you to be very specific. Even if it's about something that was completely outside our wheelhouse, it helps us to kind of see and start to feel like we're witnessing it along with you. So, I basically do a lot of interviewing. I do a lot of pulling pieces out of people saying, oh, wait, could you tell me a little more about that person?
So you said the good advice you got was to make art as though your parents were dead. Yours are not. Have they seen your act?
They have seen very select parts of it. They don't know how to download a podcast or anything like that. I have shared some of their stories about, say, my faith, but not necessarily about my sex life.
Well, that's interesting. So you want your parents to hear the faith stories, the sex life you're going to keep to yourself, and yet you probably have a whole group of friends who may have been shocked to find out about you. Was that difficult for you to know that I'm going to tell stories about God here, and my friends didn't know that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because the way I got started with Risk was because I have so many funny stories from crazy gay sexual adventures. There was one point in the podcast where someone got up at a Risk show and told a story where he said he had attended an erotic biting workshop. And I said, Jefferson, where does one attend such a workshop? And he said, oh, I'm going to a kink camp in a few weeks. You should come. And I said, oh, well, I know I've told sex-related stories before, but I don't know anything about bondage and all that kind of stuff. And he said, oh, I'm going to this camp. You should come. He said, Kevin, take a risk. And so I felt like my show was daring me to do something. So that actually kind of changed my life. I was going out on adventures in order to live by example, take risks. And so I've told so many of those kind of stories that now I'm like, well, how can I surprise people in a new direction? And so recently I told a story about God and my Catholic upbringing and how I feel about God now. And I think that really, I always think you can be revealing new. It's like the dance of the seven veils. There's always something new to reveal.
To others and to yourself. Kevin, what a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kevin Ellison, comedian, doing his version, a version of his show, Risk, tomorrow night, Carrboro Arts Center. For more information, go to nccomedyarts.com. Just ahead, the music of John Shane. Stay tuned.